Welcome to Whiskey Shenanigans. I'm your host, Randy Warren. Whiskey Shenanigans, where we help our listeners experience the world of whiskey, every aspect of life, as if it was accompanied by a glass of bourbon. The sports world on whiskey. Basically every part of life on whiskey. Whiskey Shenanigans is about getting exclusive interviews from Bourbon Row in Kentucky, where we can learn about the secrets that make our favorite bourbons unique. We will get inside the hearts and minds of many distillers and help you understand what and how they are achieving it. Whiskey Shenanigans is about going beyond boring podcasts featuring just tastings. Heck, what do you get out of that anyway? It's about bringing on guests and experiencing the entire world through whiskey. But be warned, if you're diving in and you want to participate in these riveting discussions, you will need to grab a glass or a dram and be prepared to be entertained. Hello, Whiskey Shenanigans fans. Welcome again to another episode of Whiskey Shenanigans. And today we are very pleased and very excited to have Scott Neal from Horse Soldier with us. If you haven't heard the Horse Soldier story, you're going to want to hold on because this is a great story. This is a very patriotic story, but it's also a really great story. Glad to have you with us today, Scott.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Randy. And yeah, it's interesting when you say stories because no good story ever started over a salad, did it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, speaking of a great story, tell us how you got this thing started.
To serve together. And just like I think a lot of your fans, you just love bourbon. And so maybe it starts with the distillery tour and how we started. So in about 2015, we went to Yellowstone. We spent some time there just rediscovering who we were. I had just retired. And we came across our first small craft distillery in Driggs, Idaho.
I mean, when I went there too, I wanted to know like what was going on.
Yeah. You want to understand, you know, Mother Nature. And when I say that is I want to see the grains and understand 2-row barley, 4-row barley, 6-row barley, the malting process. You get to understand from just being there and touching and feeling and learning from the masters what it means. And I equate this to Kung Fu. All the ingredients, the elements, the precision of monitoring your energy inputs for outputs of your per bushel, all of that stuff fascinated us. And it took us about 2 years of traveling the world because then we went to Ireland, we went to Cuba, we went to distilleries in the U.S. and just started absorbing it by being there, looking at the back of the bottle, but being on the ground with these master distillers.
Yeah, you know, the art side is very prevalent.
It is. And even the philosophy of the distiller, when you go to Ireland, it's still the fun and joy of making whiskey, right? And tasting the product and sharing it with friends is the exclamation point. Scotland is very precise. Each and every step is very calculated and measured. You know, a lot of the Irish distiller says, really, there is no bad whiskey. Only better. And so their philosophy was every day I try to make a little bit better whiskey. And if not, I'm going to enjoy what I have. So we learned from everybody. There was a nugget we took away and that helped us adapt to who we are today.
So at what point did you then decide, all right, it's time to buy a still and start making this stuff?
You know, first you order your first little thing on Amazon, right? That little crock pot looking still. And at the time, you could file for a permit, and we started just teasing and playing, and then we bought our first 32-gallon hillbilly still. And the funniest part is, if I showed you this, we've got a fish tank in the background that was actually our cooler, right? Because, you know, you have to, every aspect of this ourselves, and you learn through mistakes. Each batch was like, learn how to make at scale our recipes, and that's how Horse Soldier was born.
Right.
Well, we didn't think about selling it. This truly was a hobby amongst friends, right? How our brand became a brand is we had been making several barrels, so we would go there and we knew what whiskey we liked, we had to learn how whiskey was made, and then we had to learn how to make the whiskey we liked. So we had started making a few barrels here and there at the end of their runs when the movie came out. And this is the moment that nobody knew our story. So now people know us as the Horse Soldiers. They know Mark and Bob and Vince. The movie came out and they wanted everybody to go to New York City for the premiere. And we didn't want to go. Then they invited the wives. So now we're going. But then we said, well, we can only go because I know there's an after party because we've been known to like to be at a party. If we can bring some of this whiskey we had been making, and we didn't have a name or anything. And they said, sure, bring some of your Horse Soldiers whiskey. And so we literally went, it was very young at the time, and poured it in a bottle and printed off the logo to the statue at Ground Zero. And we just called it Horse Soldier Whiskey or Bourbon. And that's how the brand was born. Discipline of patience and what we know is the right way. There is every opportunity to take shortcuts or to save, right? So that comes from too much business of making whiskey and not the art of making whiskey. But at the end of the day, we do make something and we sell it.
And how did you guys come up with this idea for the bottle?
You step up to a bar and you're looking in the background. You're looking for your favorite. Like I can see all the brands behind you. And each one of the brands has a unique name, a unique shape. We knew we needed our own. So nobody knows who we are. And I said, no. Just think about it. I think I know where some steel is. And they laughed for a moment. And they said, sure, if you get us some steel, we'll make a bottle mold. And I literally called my friends and they sent us a ton. It went to the foundry. It was cut down. That's where the foundry workers realized it was World Trade Center steel. And it was formed into our mold. So now every bottle is formed by the molds from World Trade Center. That's why in every bottle it says forged in fire.
Hold that up again. I think you mentioned Elizabeth.
Elizabeth.
But yes. I wanted to get through the distribution side first. Where did you first get a distributor?
So how we began distribution is we came home from that red carpet premiere and we went to a charity event and the owners of ABC Liquor in Florida were there and took some bottles. You know, we put them on the bar. We had a good time. They're like, well, crap, if you got bottles, we'll buy some. So at the very beginning, we literally put some in a trunk of a car and we drove to the liquor store and we said, hey, last weekend, this guy said he was the owner and he said he wanted a couple cases and pay me my money. And they're like, sir, this doesn't work this way. So we literally went back and took Allegiant Air and we spent 18 hours in a warehouse bottling 500 cases. You guys, yes, we're now all completely legal and compliant. There's a whole nother side. There's the day after, and that is distribution. And what we learned is you've got to tell your story 1,000 times to 1,000 people who then take your product and go into 1,000 restaurants or 1,000 liquor stores. So you have to say something very simple. They have to believe not only in the story, but they have to believe in the quality, right? Because people only buy it once to try it, twice because they like it. So that philosophy we had to learn, so much so that today we partnered with the Gallo family and everybody Gallo. So what that allows us to do is they have a sales force. We can be us. We can focus on making great bourbon and be the face of the brand. They have the expertise and the network and the transportation abilities to deliver our product. And it's the partnership. No more U-Hauls. Now we're in trains. And we learned that I can yell and scream and jump up and down and do funny, clever promotional things. But until I build the customer that's there when I'm not, that will tell their friend what you ought to try, that's when your brand is sticky. And that's when you begin to, 100 years from now, we won't be here. But somebody will be enjoying our brand and telling our story. And that's what we look forward to.
It's So tell me, transition to this 250th American 4th of July. You're doing something special for this anniversary.
Very special. I wish I had a bottle because I've already shipped them, but this year is America's 250. So, you know, I'm a patriot in the sense of I love the idea of America. I grew up on the idea of America. And what I say by that is in school, we were taught, you know, patriotism, Minutemen, the history of the Revolution, the foundation of the Constitution, all the way through of protecting those ideas today. And that's why I joined the military. And I try to represent those ideals. Now that it's our 250th anniversary, I was alive when it was the 200th as a kid. And I remember star-spangled banners everywhere, flags, parades, VFWs with Jeeps. That idea of that celebration has been in my head. So this year, we changed what we're doing a little bit. The bottle we have, and I wish I had a bottle here, but you can go online and see it. It's called the Liberty Edition. And it's a beautiful faded copper bottle. It has the Statue of Liberty torch on top. And it's a reflection of those ideas that America is great for everybody that wants to take the opportunity. You know, we forget there's a lot of people that want to be given the opportunity, right? They're mad because maybe they don't believe, you know, the opportunity exists for them. I grew up on the other side. I can do anything if I want to do it. And so that's what the bottle is called, the Liberty Edition, and we only made 1,776. If you go on our website, Horse Soldier Bourbon, you can see the locations that have them. It looks like a decanter. It's so beautiful. And it's a 13-year-old bourbon that is just like the 13 stars in the original Betsy Ross flag. So a lot of symbolism inside of that. So next week, you'll see the press release come out. We're going to New York City, of course. We're going to visit the statue. We're going to do some things with the NYPD and FDNY. And we'll have a big celebration at my favorite store, Filson, which is kind of Western wear. And we'll just have a kickoff party. And there we go. And that's on the road to this year's 250th. Matter of fact, I've got some of our programming, right?
Ah, there it is. Yeah. Cheers to 250.
Right. And that leads us to ultimately our grand opening on the 4th of July. So our grand opening, we have been building for the last few years, a very big production facility, the most modern in Kentucky. And we wanted our grand opening to be the biggest small town 4th of July party in America. It's a nice, very, cool, very bold statement. Yes. I think I can deliver that. We have been partnered with professional bull riding last year. So this year we're actually going to have 2 days of professional bull riding out at Horse Soldier Farms. We'll have a concert. We'll have fireworks. We'll have some bourbons that people haven't seen or tried yet. I will try to live up to my promise of the biggest small town 4th of July celebration in America. Now, and New York's going to have a big one. DC is going to have a big one. Philadelphia is going to have a big one. But I come from small town America. So.
And what small town is it?
Somerset, Kentucky. So Somerset, Kentucky is known because of Lake Cumberland here. And it gets, you know, people from north, south, east, west come and spend their weekends on the lake. So they get about 4 million visitors a year. So the Bourbon Trail gets 2 million. So if I can bring east meets west on the bourbon, you know, the southernmost point or the beginning of the trail, and you can stay and play and drink great bourbon and a day on the lake, that is small town America.
That is small town. I love that. That is fantastic. So inside this particular bottle, this 250th edition, what is different about the juice? We're nothing. Maybe it's just
this is very interesting because the barrels I selected, we didn't make this. We've had a partnership for a very long time. So most people are used to barrel picks and maybe you can go to a distillery. Well, imagine knowing the distiller or knowing the warehouseman and them teaching you for years. and you're going into a 1 year barrel stack, or you're going into a 3 year barrel stack, you know, you want to know how your barrels are going to age and what is maturation. So it is a study in itself. And then you get to taste a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 13, a 14, and a 16. You know what I mean? You get to see you have to baby the barrel as it gets older. You know what I mean? Just like ourselves, you need a little bit more attention. You've got to exercise. You've got to understand if it's turning or not turning. So we set a more of an emotional 13, right? And we want the best 13 we can find. So we spent some time, you know, trying a lot of barrels. And that's the fun part. You know, yes, no, no, maybe, could be, no, yes. And then, you know, to finally find the barrels you want. And then some of these barrels were almost at 140 proof. And we didn't want to put that in a bottle, but it shows you the range we were finding. Right. And so we proofed it down to 100, because sometimes, you know, we want this company to be a 100-year legacy. And it is beautiful. Here's the problem. Most people, one, because of the price point, two, because it's such a beautiful bottle, they don't want to drink it. So they're almost missing the end state of everything that was chosen. And I say drink it. And if you want to display it, just put some iced tea in it, right? And it looks like it. That way somebody sneaking your very, very, very good bourbon, they'll know that you know.
Yeah, right? They'll know they got scammed.
So it's, and once again, I wish I had a bottle here, and I'm so sad just because I've taken them all to New York where we're doing the launch, and it is beautiful. The bottle's beautiful. The packaging's beautiful. The bourbon's beautiful. The reason we did it is the right reason, right? You get a lot of these celebrity brands and you're like, okay, I liked you in a movie, but you know, I don't know if you made this or not, or if you care enough about it. Here, everything about it is why, you know, we started this business.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I think there's a lot of celebrity brands. They just put their name on it. It's like, oh, here's a business you can get involved in. You know, their manager is like, oh yeah, get involved in this. We'll put your name on it. It'll sell because of your name.
Yeah. And I never want to be discouraging to anybody, you know, doing this business for the reasons you're doing it, right? And consumers also get to know and decide, you know, I like this bourbon because of the reasons or because of the celebrity. That's up to you, right? I love America so much that I can't say anything about others and what they're trying to do. All I can do is tell our story and the reasons why we do things the way we do them.
I like your bourbon, and I would pick your bourbon because I love the story, and I would give it that, like you said, I would give it that try. But then what's inside is really good.
Doesn't suck, does it? Imagine, really? Here is the ultimate test. Everything you do goes away. And then the most nervous part is when you wake it up and you determine. I can honestly say every decision about every aspect we have been involved in. So when is this the right age, right? When are these barrels need to age a little longer? Everything I can say, we were standing there together arguing amongst friends, is this time or not time? And the ones that revealed themselves instantly were obvious. The ones that didn't, they were obvious. It's always the middle. Right. The best argument is, this barrel really ready? I don't think so. You think so? Let's think so. You know what? Let's push it back. So those are the conversations. I wish a lot of our fans were there with us when we do that.
Yeah. Fantastic. And you know what? This is a great, great story. And I love talking to you about it. You know, we're going to keep in touch and we're going to keep tabs on this 250th. Anniversary, and I can go to your website and I can find out where to buy some.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something, you know, to take to represent the time that you should celebrate, right? I feel right now, you know, I love America so much, sometimes I wonder why other people don't, right? And so this is our statement that, you know, despite the conversation of today, right, we should all be celebrating the foundation of what has been built for us.
Right.
And there's no better way than a nice bourbon, America's spirit. And if you're going to do a toast on 4th of July with friends and family, you should make it special. And I hope our bourbon is something you choose.
Definitely, because, you know, 4th of July brings people together, but, you know, whiskey brings people together.
Yeah, it does. I'm on the celebration side of a good drink, right? And sometimes, you know, you're celebrating a loss of a friend. I'm never on the weapons of mass consumption side of bourbon. It's like, really? You're just going to do that? Holy, there's other stuff you could do. Good bourbon is worth a good conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we've had a great conversation today, and I really appreciate the time that we've spent. And I'm glad that our fans are going to get to hear your story. And, you know, good luck with this 250th celebration and the greatest small town, you know, opening ever.
Yes.
That's good stuff too. Boy, I'll have to see if I can get to Somerset, Kentucky.
You won't be disappointed.
Absolutely. That'd be fun. Well, thank you very much. I know I appreciate it because you're doing things a little differently. You've got a different story. You're innovating and your hands are dirty. You're in there making it happen. And that's what makes this such a great story.
Well, it's because it's our own, right? If it wasn't mine, why would I care kind of aspect? Because it is, I have to be there every day.
Thank you very much, Scott. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Hello again, Whiskey Shenanigans fans, for another episode of Shenanigans portion. We thought we would take on another topic in the industry. There's a lot of people saying things like people don't drink as much as they used to or things like that. The question is it a misnomer that younger adults, 18 to 34, 21 to 34 drinking age, are they drinking less? The answer is there is real data. Unfortunately, yes, there is real data behind the claim that younger adults are drinking less alcohol. There's the nuance that really matters here. It's not simply everybody drinks less. It's not that simple. It's a mix of lower participation overall, mixed with a strong desire to trade up for those people who choose to drink. They're looking for the experiences. They're looking for the stories for those people who choose to drink. And they're looking for the quality product. What does the data actually show? So we looked at data from Monitoring the Future, Gallup, and the NSDUH, which we'll talk about in just a minute. But the data shows that in this younger adult category, more young adults are choosing not to drink at all. So that part of the category is growing. However, it doesn't simply mean that younger adults are choosing not to drink. Drinking in this category, for those who choose to drink, is actually increasing. And when people choose to drink, they are choosing to drink higher end products that have a story behind them and are more experiential. So the data from these collection groups that do surveys, the Monitoring the Future has been working on a long running national study that began as early as 1975 by the University of Michigan with funding from the NIDA, which is now the National Institutes of Health. Their study basically focuses on the behavior of high school kids all the way up until about age 30. And their methodology consists of large annual surveys of tens of thousands of respondents and school-based follow-ups. The Gallup poll shows that adults under 35 who say they drink has dropped from in the 70% range to in the 60% range more recently. There is no comparable decline in the older age categories. Interesting. The National Survey on Drug Use, the NIH or NSDUH, is run by the government. It is a large data set on about substance use. They survey about 70,000 people annually online and in person. And the long-term trends show that alcohol use is down, binge drinking is down, but post-COVID, there is a rebound in some of these metrics. So what we see, yeah, there's a steady rise in people choosing to abstain. In the early 2000s, that group was 10 to 15% of young people. Now it's 20 to 30% of young people. Not a good statistic for the bourbon industry. But it is clear that, you know, no question about it, far more are choosing not to drink at all. Drinking frequency has also been declining. Fewer people report weekly drinking or report only drinking on occasion or rare drinking. And the conclusion here is that there is a shift from habitual to situational drinking, experiential drinking. And binge drinking is somewhat mixed. After COVID, there's been sort of a rebound of that. The decline is not a straightforward line down. It's not a straightforward decline. So total alcohol consumption is not collapsing. The world is not over for the whiskey industry. Here's a key contradiction to the general knowledge narrative that there's less drinking going on. Total U.S. alcohol sales have held up. 2025 was the first slightly down year. Why? Because older folks are drinking more, and everyone wants premiumization, higher spend per drink, experiential. They want more from what they're drinking. They don't want to just drink the regular stuff necessarily. So what's driving all this shift? Well, there's some behavioral and cultural factors, health optimization mindset, for sure. The young people, you know, I moved to Charlotte recently and I see them out jogging all the time up and down the railways and whatnot. I mean, it's a healthy group of people, no doubt about it. So they are concerned with fitness. They're concerned with sleep. They're concerned with longevity, mental health awareness, and they're concerned with social media. They don't want to appear on social media to be out of control. And some are using cannabis as a substitution, no question about it. The economic factors that might drive some to drink a little bit less is the higher cost of living, student debt pressures, less disposable income for just going out and experiencing the nightlife. And there is some product substitution going on. Non-alcoholic drinks are becoming more popular. Non-alcoholic beer and spirits, low alcohol by volume drinks, brands like Athletic Brewing Company and all these others. I mean, they're even putting water in a can that looks like a beer and calling it liquid death. It's just water, folks. But people will pay $10 for it at a bar. The most important nuance is it's not just young people drink less across the board. It's more of a split behavior. For those choosing not to drink at all, that group is growing. But for those who choose to drink, they're seeking out the premium, experience-driven, higher quality drinks. And intentional consumption overall, intentional consumption, is definitely up. The implication is younger consumers who do drink, they care more about the story. They care more about access. They care more about exclusivity. They care less about volume. They care more about identity. And this implies something when you start to think about experiential drinking. It implies something about barrel picks. We recently talked about barrel picks on one of our episodes in Shenanigans. It implies that barrel picks should be very popular because you're getting a very exclusive access to what's going on behind the scenes in Kentucky. You're getting the good stuff. Overall consumption, yeah. Data supports that the younger cohort is drinking less overall, but it is driven by non-drinkers, and those that remain are trading up and spending more. Given that Kentucky and Tennessee have spent a lot of money and time in recent years on prioritizing experiential storytelling in their brands, and that the bourbon trail has gone from modestly warm to red hot in recent years. It appears that distilleries are tapping into those drinkers that want the experience and the premium product. They're doing a good job. In recent years, you might even generalize and say, oh man, if you've been to Nashville recently, it's all, you know, girls with, you know, their bridal parties and one last fling in Nashville and whooping it up. Where do the guys go? Well, we were on the Kentucky Trail recently, and there was a ton of bachelor parties on the Kentucky Trail. Bachelors are going to the Kentucky Trail. They're going to the Bourbon Trail. They're going to the experiences that are being created at these distilleries. The behind-the-scenes look, the access, it's very cool, and that's what people are going for. So that's what we have for you today on this shenanigans portion of the episode. See you next time.